The markets. We just can't get enough of them.
Markets are the drivers of your wealth and investment strategy.
Welcome to Magic Markets with your co-hosts, the Finance Coast and Mohammed Nalla.
Together, we have more than 25 years of combined experience in the markets.
For those looking to take their market and business knowledge to the next level, we offer Magic Markets Premium. Our recent shows have included turnaround candidates like Nike, Walgreens, and Burberry, as well as a portfolio staple like JP Morgan. We also ventured off the beaten track into groups like 3M and ASML that may not always be on your radar. Visit magic-markets.com today and go premium to get these insights. Welcome to episode 219 of Magic Markets. We come to you in a week where Donald Trump has caused a gigantic amount of volatility in everyone's portfolios. The Rand is on a one-way ticket to hell, it seems. The S&P 500 jumps around like a sugar-laden toddler. It's all a bit chaotic. And Mo, you are out there, and you swore me to secrecy on this, but I don't care. You are out there busy doing some day trading on the market and making some money. All very exciting. So welcome to Magic Markets. If you are listening to this for the first time ever, then especially welcome. And if you're an old listener, thank you for including us in a busy week in the markets. We'll try and impart, hopefully, some knowledge, but also a little bit of what we're doing when the markets get like this.
Indeed, Ghost. I mean, last week, Liberation Day, April 2nd. I'm glad he didn't frame it on April 1st. Everyone would have thought it was an April Fool's joke.
Should have been an April Fool's joke, but wasn't. That's the irony.
Well, the irony is that it was called Liberation Day, and I saw a very apt comment out there on social media saying that all that he's actually served to do is liberate investors from their gains. Following his tariff announcement, I mean, literally, that was it. Someone sent me, I can't say it on here because this is a clean show. We don't swear on here. But they sent me this very cool meme of Donald Trump looking very serious. And he said, F your portfolio, right?
Yeah, there we go. My favorite one was actually J.D. Vance. So, you know, they've done that like really ugly meme where he's very overweight with this. But like,
have you said thank you yet?
That's it. I don't know if you ever played Theme Hospital when you were a kid. It was this like Sims game. And one of the illnesses that people came in with was something called bloated head syndrome.
Bloaty head syndrome. I played that. Bloaty head syndrome.
Or was it bloaty? Sure, you remember it better than me. So anyway, J.D. Vance looks like he has that. And as you say, pointing at the, you know, and it's obviously taken from that crazy meeting they had with Zelensky. And then inevitably, they've placed him against a backdrop of just all these red stock prices. So yeah, it's the internet keeps delivering the humor and some crazy rumors as well. I saw that Walter Bloomberg channel on X Twitter, you know, went and caused a whole lot of market moves based on something going out that I think wasn't true. I kind of skimmed that headline. It's chaos out there. It's an absolute circus. And I suppose this is part of why we love the markets and part of why people hate them.
I skimmed it as well because there's so much fake news out there. I mean, who even knows whether it's legit or not? All I know is that I'm watching, you've mentioned it, so I'll talk a little bit about it, right? I'm watching this on a micro basis. I had a strategy that I'd used during COVID of intraday trading, very high frequency type stuff. And so you're sitting there, you're watching the candles, like literally tick by tick, minute by minute. It's really intense stuff. And what it did give us is yesterday, the day before as well, you know, last week, the market was handing out 100 point moves on the S&P future, where usually it gives out 10 point moves. And that kind of volatility can be very scary. If you're watching it very closely, you can make or lose a lot of money. I was just going back to your J.D. Vance analogy there, because it's so funny. You know, we could talk about being overweight equities. I mean, I'm not going to make any jokes about Vance and the bloated face out there. What I will tell you is that it's just maybe starting off, I don't even know where to start, but maybe starting off with what these tariffs...
Wait, before you start, I'll let you talk about tariffs now, but I just have to mention, on the phone yesterday, I have to share with our listeners something that Mo said to me about his intraday trading strategy. And he said to me, you know, Ghost, well, he didn't say Ghost, he said my name because, you know, we know each other. He said, it's like being a Formula One driver, you're just chasing those tenths, you're chasing those basis points. So there we go, everyone. If you ever want to hear Mo talk about himself being much cooler than he really is, he's equated his day trading strategy to what it's like to be chasing a few tenths on the racetrack. He did at least spare me a Top Gun reference and potentially Danger Zone playing in the background. That's what I imagine, Mo. All your screens, it's very hardcore, in the zone trading going on there, where in reality, it was probably you and two screens and a hoodie and a few hundred basis points here and there, huh?
I've got to wear the aviator shades. Then I'll be really cool and have that song going in the background.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? I'll have to disown you, literally.
You're getting sidetracked. Let's talk about the tariffs. It's very important. Donald Trump, you know, he went and he tasked his team with going and figuring out what tariffs are being levied against the United States. And then again, lots of internet memes, but probably some credence behind this, because if you go and ask ChatGPT to do this for you, you'd get the response that came out from the Trump administration. Because all they did is they took the US trade deficit with any country out there, and I'll touch on that shortly, any country out there, and then they divided that by the value of imports from the country. And they equated that to a tariff. They said, that's the tariff. And so we're going to be generous and we're going to halve that. And then we're going to levy that as reciprocal tariffs. Now, the TLDR on this is not how you calculate tariffs that are out there, because looking at trade deficits will actually wrap up not just tariff barriers, but a whole bunch of structural issues as well. This is not a sophisticated way of going about it. And that's how they came about it. I mean, the joke out there is that their tariffs actually even apply to countries that don't really exist. There's some uninhabited island nations. I've never heard of the Heard and McDonald Islands in the Antarctic, but guess what? They got reciprocal tariffs. And the reason for this is that it's almost as though they mapped this against internet domains, because you can get internet domains from the Heard and McDonald Islands. And so they're like, any country with an internet domain, let's look at this and we're going to levy tariffs against you. What's absolutely remarkable is before the week started, Trump was on his plane flying back from Mar-a-Lago, going to start some work, you know, golfing all weekend. And his comment was, I don't want, with reference to the market going down, I don't want anything to go down, but sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something. And in fact, he actually went as far as to say that, you know, it's a beautiful thing to behold. So I don't know if the Trump administration has just short the market, but this move now pushes the average US tariff rate above levels that we had seen in 1930. I think it was called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1930. And a lot of economists out there say that that act was one of the key factors that worsened the Great Depression. So I know it's been a decent week. Yesterday wasn't terrible. Today the markets are up again. But I think some of these risks are not actually, they've not abated. And the question for me is, I see this as the world's biggest poker game, Ghost. I'm going to end off on this point and then let you chime in as well, right? This is the world's greatest poker game because it's a question of whose pain threshold is actually lower. Can the US actually say, yes, we can take 10, 20, 30, whatever percentage decline in our markets, but we're going to make this stick. And already you're starting to see some cracks emerge. You've had certain world leaders calling Trump, flying to see Trump, saying, hey, you know what? We've decreased all our tariffs to zero. Let's talk. Let's negotiate. The problem here is that there's very disparate messaging coming out of the administration. That contributed to that story you mentioned on social media, which said that there was going to be a 90-day pause in terms of some of these tariffs. That was then refuted by the White House. But certain officials are saying, this is not a negotiation. And other officials are saying, call us, we're happy to negotiate. How do business leaders invest for the long term? That capacity building that Trump wants to onshore into the US, that's not going to come until confidence is restored to the markets, let alone investor sentiment over the shorter term.
Absolutely. Look, I'm half ashamed to tell you that I once read one of Trump's books on negotiation. This was way back in the day when he was on The Apprentice and I was this young and impressionable young capitalist. And I thought this was fantastic. So I read his book on his negotiating style. And I mean, it basically, the TLDR is, if you have the biggest stick on the playground, then you just threaten to basically murder everyone until they beg you to stop. And then you start negotiating from there. That's essentially what he does. So Trump's style is only possible when you are holding the biggest stick of everyone on the playground. He's a bully. Like that's the reality of how he does things. Love him or hate him, that is his approach. And he basically uses anchoring bias. I mean, he doesn't say it like that, but that's what he does, is he uses anchoring bias. So basically I say to you, you know, here's a potentially really terrible outcome. Now I've anchored you there. Now we're thinking about this potentially terrible outcome. Now you pick up the phone to talk to me from a place of, oh my gosh, this is the worst possible thing that could happen. Let me do what I can to stop it. And now we've started the negotiation all the way over there instead of any kind of reasonable level. And then through a process of what is basically almost a hostage situation more than a negotiation, someone gets brought back down to maybe, you know, halfway between what would have been a reasonable start and what is an extreme start. And then Trump claims a famous victory because, you know, in truth, he then ended up probably far better along that spectrum or far more along that spectrum towards a favorable outcome than any rational person would have gotten. So that's what's happening now is world leaders are picking up the phone and, You know, will they get to a point where they find some kind of equilibrium? Well, we certainly hope so. Is there a possible outcome where the likes of China just tell him to get lost entirely? There is a possible outcome, and that would then be a serious shift in the way the world works. There would then be a lot of pain in a lot of places. And I just shake my head and laugh at some of the stuff I've seen on social media, like American politicians and people of influence complaining that, you know, Europeans don't buy their cars. What on earth are you going to do with an oversized Chevrolet in the streets of Spain? Like, do any of these people ever travel anywhere, Mo? Anywhere at all?
I'm laughing so hard because you're so right. If you speak to most sane Americans, and again, I've got some bias here, right? But most sane Americans, people that invest in markets, that have traveled, that are well-educated, they think this is a complete disaster. I could use less polite words than that, so I'm just going to restrain myself. But I think it goes back to your point of Trump uses anchoring bias. Anyone who's gone shopping at the Oriental Plaza in Johannesburg will know very well how this negotiation tactic works. Or if you've gone to a market in Turkey, you know, you start off at like 100 lira, but the actual price is probably around 20 lira. So, you know, it's that kind of negotiation tactic. Now, the important point, and you've touched on it, but I want to maybe unpack that a little bit, is that it all boils down to what cards do you hold? And you're sitting in South Africa. The fact of the matter is South Africa doesn't hold a lot of cards. I mean, this recent tariff announcement is likely going to hit specific sectors in South Africa quite hard. I saw a report saying that it could jeopardize 35,000 jobs in the agricultural sector alone. Remember, South Africa exports a lot of citrus product to the US. That potentially a flashpoint. But other countries out there maybe have their own big stick. I mean, yes, the US is the biggest, baddest bully on the playground, but maybe there's a new kid on the block, and that new kid is China. You know, I mean, Canada's kind of been digging in. We're holding our own. We've got a big energy stick to try and hold over the US. We are one of the largest, if not the largest, trading partner. And, you know, I think that's a fairly big stick to wield. So it depends on what cards you hold. And this is the point I want to make, is let's look at China. Because China is arguably, by some measures, PPP adjusted, the world's largest economy, or maybe second largest if you don't adjust for PPP. So what can China actually do? And the Chinese have actually doubled down. You know, they've come out and they've said they're going to fight this to the end. I think that was the actual words. Don't quote me on it, but I think those were the Chinese words, maybe lost in translation, but I'm going to stick with that. And China can use tariff measures, sure, no problem. They've already indicated that. They've said reciprocal tariffs, and if Trump escalates those, they're going to escalate on their side. So that's really what you would call a trade war. That's essentially a trade war. But there are also non-tariff measures that China can use. And this could be stuff that they've used in the past. So customs delays on any US product coming into China and so forth. They could use licensing and certification hurdles. They could use things like consumer boycotts. Also, targeted investigations and audits. Remember, a lot of US firms are heavily dependent on China. China's been the growth story for a lot of these stocks. Then it went sideways for a long time. But China is a very important market for US firms. And this is what Trump doesn't get, is those firms, if you look at tech stocks, for example, 50% or more of their earnings actually come from outside of the US. So this trade war is going to hurt their earnings, and it's going to hurt US taxation revenue. So pay attention to that. On top of that, they could blacklist US firms. And so how does this manifest? You're already starting to see players, and I chuckled when I saw this, but Bill Ackman, you know, he's famous for those super long tweets that no one uses. In fact, I think, you know, Grok summarized this, is actually just designed for Bill Ackman. You've got Bill Ackman, and he's been backtracking. I mean, he was seen as an enabler to Trump winning the presidency, now saying, geez, this tariffs, we've got to really rethink it. You've had some recent news flow, I don't know how much credence you can put on this, of Elon Musk saying, geez, we've got to relook at tariffs. I wouldn't be surprised by that, because maybe Elon got a call from some of his executives sitting in China saying the Chinese are maybe threatening to pull Tesla's access to this market completely. Then you've even got Jamie Dimon, someone who we respect so much. And I hated this because I saw it in January. Jamie Dimon came out and said, yeah, there's the US tariffs and you just got to deal with it. I think those were his words, deal with it. Even Jamie Dimon coming back saying these tariffs are going to do damage. We've got to rethink some of this. So I think that reorientation, it's very well and good when someone's throwing the threats around and you think it's just the threat. I think Donald Trump can dig in his heels because he's the president. He can do what he wants. And he can actually say, well, actually, I'm going to stick with this. So let's see, because the market is hinging on that. If there's a capitulation, a softening, you're going to see this market rally really, really strongly because a lot of the negativity that's come through, that's representing these asymmetric risks that I think are helping push up markets, certainly over the last two trading sessions.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see how long the Musk-Trump bromance actually lasts because I think it's already on shaky ground. I never really believed it from the start. It just felt like, you know, one guy wants to do sustainable energy and electric cars and the other guy is basically a fossil fuel on legs. So I don't really see how these two have much in common beyond just being power hungry. And truthfully, that's honestly what I thought. So last week we did a show on the consumer conundrum and how these consumer stocks have done in both markets, being South Africa now in the US. And we kind of said, well, you know, at the moment we weren't ready to dive in. Obviously, this has been a rapidly developing situation in the past week. You know, the markets have done a lot of big moves in a short space of time. Mo, what have you, apart from a bit of day trading with your aviators on and sending me ridiculous messages about feeling like a Formula One driver, what is your approach in the market been? Have you bought any long-term stuff? Have you just been looking to day trade a bit? What have you done?
My focus was to try and take advantage of the volatility because if you can get that right, you can really get some supersized returns over a very short period of time. I must stress it's a non-directional strategy. So it doesn't matter if the markets go up or go down. You're really looking at not carrying any overnight position. So you're not getting the big, hey, guess what? You know, Japan opened up 15%, circuit breakers triggered. You're not getting that move, but also you get to sleep at night. So that's what I've been doing. On the long portfolio, the investment portfolio, not the trading portfolio, I'm pretty comfortable because if I look at what US markets have sold off by, I'm still up on a year-to-date basis, touch wood. That's a great position to be in. I'm not up as much as Warren, but I'm up. And I've been very defensive. Like I say, utilities have been okay. A lot of the defensive stuff has sold off, but not as aggressively. And so, like I say, I'm sitting on a lot of dry powder. I am looking to deploy that. I haven't yet. And that's because I don't know what the game is. I don't know if Trump digs in his heels. And if we actually see some pretty deep economic results come through, I want to touch on this point because if you go and have a look at the big banks, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, they've all ratcheted up their probability of a US recession significantly. So Goldman Sachs from 35% to 45%. I think I saw a report of JP Morgan ratcheting that up to 60%. So no surprises that Jamie Dimon's starting to say, hey, guess what? Tariffs might be a problem. The fact of the matter is that these tariffs are going to do economic damage. If they do economic damage, there's going to be pressure on earnings. And if there's pressure on earnings, in a context where US stocks have been trading at very elevated valuations, a lot of the themes that we were positioning on going into this crisis, I'm going to call it a crisis, going into this crisis are still relevant. And those themes are play defensive sectors. Those themes are look at ex-US stocks, because I think despite what Trump does now, even if he backpedals on the tariffs, like you say, we've moved from a position where everything was okay to an extreme position, and Trump's going to look for a win here. So there are going to be winners and losers. And I think globally, certainly that he's levied these tariffs indiscriminately against allies and non-allies, that's going to actually orientate a lot of global economies to say, how do we become a lot more self-sufficient? How do we get our growth rates going? I think this was the best thing that could have happened to Europe. I think it's the best thing that could have happened to Canada because it kicks them out of the stupor that they've been in over the last several years to say, hey, how do we supercharge our economies? That's how I'm playing it. Patient. I haven't sold anything either. No panic selling either. Simply because I'm comfortable with the defensive positioning. And then when the dust seems to settle, I don't mind losing the first couple of percent that comes through. It might be a lot because markets have sold off a lot, but I want to see some line of sight before taking much longer term decisions, Ghost. What about you?
So I'll tell you now, but there's one share price chart that I just have to raise because for whatever reason, it just popped into my head to Google it quickly while you were talking. So Palantir, PE multiple, Mo, currently 439. So I think we can all agree that's a lot. Don't cheat now. Year-to-date share price move. What do you think it's done in this whole chaos and comedy on a PE of 439? What do you reckon has happened to the stock this year?
It doesn't matter because even if it halved, it's probably on like 200, right? 200 PE.
No, it's on 439 now. It's currently on 439.
Oh my, that's even worse, right? I mean, stocks like Palantir, stocks like Tesla have been hard hit because they're so intrinsically linked to this Trump administration. I wouldn't be surprised to see this thing down like 30, 40, maybe 50%. I don't know. What's the number?
Hard hit since February, maybe. But no, it's up. It's
what?
Up year to date.
No
it's way. Actually up 10% year to date. So I think what got hit harder, remember that Palantir caught that kind of initial Trump won rally that Tesla also caught, but I'm looking at Tesla now, but then Palantir's held on to it. Tesla down, this is crazy. Tesla down 40% year to date, Palantir up 9%.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't have an explanation.
I was guessing it's similar to Tesla, so that's wrong.
Yeah, and I don't blame you because they were tracking at the end of last year. They were super highly correlated, and that correlation has fallen apart this year.
I pulled up the chart, so now I'm cheating, right? And I think if you look at the peak, right, $120 peak on Palantir in February, so that was the massive rally. And then got down to the 60s, now the 80s. I mean, that's pain. Okay, no one's picking tops and bottoms here. I'll tell you why, right, is in the world that you have right now, Palantir is arguably in the defense business, right? And with the kind of fractures that you're seeing, the geopolitical tensions, China versus US, Palantir's well positioned to pick up on some of those tailwinds. So that's maybe why it's held up, whereas Tesla doesn't have the defense angle to it. It'll be very interesting to go and pull up a chart on some of the other defense contractors. And I'll do that very quickly while we're actually talking. Let's look at Lockheed Martin, you know, and Lockheed Martin similarly, you know, kind of peaked around what, September last year, 600s, down to 400. So yeah, Palantir, definitely an interesting one there, Ghost, because not even the big defense companies have managed to hold on as well as Palantir.
Yeah, look, it's fascinating. I mean, there was no reason for it to be well correlated with Tesla last year. That was just weird. Palantir is a business that I actually really like, although not on a PE of 430.
I don't like them. I'm gesturing here. I don't like them because of maybe it's the business they're in, but like some of the commentary coming out of the management.
No, they're weird. They're very weird.
On a number of, well, two screens, right? One on an ethical screen, I just don't like the business. And the fact that I would probably look at Lockheed Martin, but not Palantir should tell you a lot, right? Is Palantir would fail for me on that. Maybe not the guns manufacturers. The other screen is that they're very opaque. You know, it's still very much a black box. A lot of people don't really know what they do. That for me is not a good look.
AI mode. They do AI and then they pump the multiple. What else do you need to do? At least they actually do AI. Unlike most stocks where the management talks about AI, like Palantir actually does AI. But you are right. They are super weird. I agree with you. It's a serious gamble. You don't really know what you're buying. You're getting some very weird characters behind the scenes. But they do actually seem to make money out of AI, which is more than most can say.
And the bottom line for me, Ghost, is that sometimes you've got to be comfortable to just avoid stuff that you don't understand or don't have a good feel for. You know, I mean, we've avoided Tesla through the ups and downs simply because, you know, there's a lot that doesn't make sense to us. The valuation's overcooked, all of those things. Sometimes just steer away. I steer away from anything that's meme stockish. And for me, Palantir kind of ticked the meme stock base as well. So
definitely,
a number of screens for me mean that I don't waste any time watching the stock either. It's interesting. If you understand it, if you like it, if you get a good feel for it, go ahead, go and trade it, do what you want to do. But for me, that stock doesn't even crack it onto a watch list.
Yeah, it is an oddity. So I will tell you, as we bring this to a close, what I did buy. So I did look at this and I said, okay, this looks pretty hotly oversold. I saw an amazing headline earlier, actually, that talked about the S&P 500 being incredibly oversold and overvalued all at the same time, which is actually, I think, probably quite true. But that doesn't mean that all the names in my portfolio have been or are still that overvalued. I mean, some of them have really taken a big knock. So I basically just had a look through and I looked at some of the weightings and I thought, okay, this is a good opportunity to deploy. You know, I had some cash in my US dollar account. You don't really get rewarded for sitting in cash in dollars. You're not getting paid anything for that. So probably makes more sense to be sitting in equities long term. Basically deployed it into a few names. So Accenture, Acushnet, the golf business, they're going to get hit hard by tariffs, but we'll see where the tariffs land. Trump likes golf. So I have to believe that Acushnet's got a chance, and it's the Masters this weekend, Mo. So I mean, just, you know, the gods of golf are aligning here. It's got to do okay. Some of the other stuff, Meta, Visa, MasterCard. So some of the typical kind of compounders where if you can get them in a little bit cheaper, you know, why not? Took a bit of a risk on Lululemon, added to that position. That's one that worries me around what might happen in China. But at the end of the day, you have to believe that there's just so much money on the table held by people of such influence. I mean, we are absolute minnows, complete small fry. No one cares. The big dogs are losing a lot of money, and you have to believe that they will find some kind of half rational solution. I mean, it's either that or basically the world gets plunged into a wild recession. You see the rise of new crazy governments. You see war. I like to think we're not going to get there. And if we do get there, The few dollars that I put into the market today will probably not be my single biggest worry in that world. So sometimes I do that. I look at it and say, well, we can either worry about doomsday, in which case this money is not going to matter, or we can be happy to say doomsday probably won't happen, in which case I'll be pleased that I bought the dip. But I did wait for it to dip a lot more since last week. There was some serious pain in the market, and I bought around the market open today. We're recording this on the 8th of April. We'll see what happens. Will I live to regret it? Probably not, because my holding period is very, very long. And if it just keeps dropping, I'll just buy some more further down and hold those stocks. Those are stocks I want to hold basically forever, really. So I'm okay with doing this.
I'm chuckling because you reminded me of something. There was a colleague I used to work with. He's unfortunately subsequently passed, but he used to always be quite bearish. And I used to say, there's no upside in betting on the end of the world, because if you're right, it's the end of the world. And if you're wrong, well, you're wrong. So that talks to your sentiment, right? Is that if the world ends, the money's not going to have mattered anyway. I like some of your picks there. You know, Accenture, great quality company. Visa, MasterCard, quality companies. I also love how you and I are very different, because you won't hesitate to pull the trigger and trade on something that's sentiment related, and your reference to the Masters coming up and a Kushnet. You know, that's quintessential you. That's something I wouldn't look at. So well done.
Well, we don't know that yet. We don't know well done yet. We don't know. I tell you what, if Rory McIlroy wins this weekend, Kushnet is going to the moon, because everyone's going to be talking about golf. Watch, mate, watch. This is my, it's my McIlroy trade.
I say well done in terms of the discipline of sticking to your knitting and your strategy and what makes you you. Because doing that in times of exceptional volatility like we're seeing in the market, that's what deserves the well done. The results, that comes afterwards, right? If your strategy works for you, then well done on that. For me, I'm like I said, I'm playing it safe. There are lots of quality companies out there. We've covered a lot of stuff here on Magic Markets Premium. And quite often, it's so frustrating because you'll look at a stock and you'll be like, this is a great company, but we only see support 20, 25% lower. And around there, we'd be buyers. So I would stress to anyone who's a Magic Markets Premium subscriber, go and dust out some of the names you've been watching. Go and look at the technical charts. Go and look at the fundamental analysis. Quite often, we indicate that, you know, this is looking overbaked. And in a market that's running hot, sometimes you never get those entry points. But guess what? You may have just been handed that opportunity over the course of the last few days. That's what I'm using to actually frame the stocks that I am looking at, that I currently hold, and then may likely add to, but haven't done so yet. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week. Let us know what you thought of the show. Hit us up on social media. It's at Magic Markets Pod, one word, at Finance Ghost, and at Muhammad Nalla, all on X. Or go and find us on LinkedIn. Pop us a note on there. Good luck in the markets. Until next week, same time, same place. Thanks and cheers.
Ciao.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not financial or investment advice. Please speak to your personal financial advisor.